Okay, great. We're being recorded. So we're ready to go. Let me give a CEU code here at the beginning. There'll be another one later in the call, and you'll need both codes for CEU credit. And we'll ask you to email those to Kelly Johnson, our virtual assistant, after the call. So the first code is February. And our presenter today is Jim Smith. We've sent out a bio on Jim, but I wanted to share just a little bit about Jim myself today. He's been coaching 22 years, 17 on your own. Is that right, Jim?
That's correct.
Okay. And he's one of the founders of the Cleveland ICF chapter. We love that you're involved with the ICF chapter. And Jim has built a six-figure coaching practice and figured out how to brand himself and make a really good living as a coach. And my favorite part of his more extended bio is that he worships dark coffee, dark beer, and dark chocolate, because I really love dark chocolate as well. So, Jim, I'll turn it over to you. Feel free to add anything you'd like to add to sort of your background, and we'll get started.
Okay. Well, I want to start off. Hi, everybody, by the way. Good afternoon out there in sunny New Mexico. A little-known fact about Cleveland is that February is actually the sunniest month of the year for Cleveland. Now, sadly, it also happens to be the coldest month of the year, but I will tell you, for those of you who have never experienced it, there is an immense beauty in sunlight on a snow-covered landscape that you just can't get when you don't have winter. So I've been experiencing that the last couple days. As long as you leave out of the equation the fact that when you go out into that sunniness, within 15 minutes, your fingers can experience frostbite, because our wind chill has been 25 degrees below zero. But that's for another time. We don't put that in our marketing literature. So, I think it's also important just to say this up front. There's a lot of people who come to the marketing profession or to those who are running their own businesses and talk about marketing, and the vast majority of those folks, in my experience, are people who call themselves coaches, and what they are is they are marketing coaches. So they are marketing, you know, and they want to enroll you in their program, and they want to sign you up to help you with your marketing. And there's a lot to be said for that business model. It's not something I choose to pursue. I've hired marketing coaches. I am a coach. I coach executives. I coach leaders in organizations. My brand is the Executive Happiness Coach. The reason I do a program like this is because I very much believe in the power of coaching to change the world, and I really love supporting coaches who are trying to build a viable business model for themselves. And so I offer marketing support to people in this way, but I don't offer that as one of my offerings. I do mentor coaching to help people improve their coaching skills. So that's really where my love is. But the reality is that a lot of coaches struggle with building a business model around the coaching itself. So, you know, let's kind of dive in and investigate that particular area. So first, let's just do a little self-assessment quiz, shall we? So first question for you is, what story do you hold about running a business, especially around marketing and selling? So what's the story you hold? You know, don't spend too much time there. I'm sure you've told it to yourself many, many times. Second question is, what is the emotional space in which you hold marketing and selling? You know, like what are the emotions that come up for you? What assessments and beliefs do you have about yourself as a salesperson? that you may feel good or bad about. And then finally, when you think about marketing and selling, what happens in your body? What sensations occur? What do you notice about your breath, about your pulse, about your energy, about whether you shrink or expand? So now, having given you this first round quiz, I'd like to check in. I'd like to hear from a couple people on the call around, well, what is your story or your emotional space, or what do you notice happens to you thematically when you think about, I have to market and sell? And a reminder, Barb, it's pound or star six to come off mute if you've been on.
Right.
Star,
exactly.
Star six to mute or unmute. So.
Well, this is Stephanie.
Hi, Stephanie.
Hi. I find that I understand all that I've learned by attending, you know, trainings and so on around marketing and branding a business and so on. I can help others with it, but I find that when it comes time for me to implement any of that, my resistance is sufficient to, I'll suddenly bolt from my desk and go wash dishes or something without even thinking about it. Without even, you know, it's not even, oh, I really should go do this thing and I should do that, but I think, I don't, it's like there's something else that has to happen to get begotten done as soon as it's time to do marketing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Thank you for being brave and sharing that, right? You know, like, how many of us, without even realizing it, notice that, you know, we go and do something we can accomplish that feels very doable to us because marketing is, you know, a little scary, or it's icky, or it's unknown, or it's uncomfortable. Yeah. So thank you, Seth.
And my discomfort isn't that it's icky. It goes deeper than that.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
What's deeper than icky?
Well, I really get it that when I am, what it goes to is a fear of putting myself out there and taking that risk of putting myself out there, of being seen, and either, you know, there are all kinds of possibilities when I'm seen that are scary.
Yeah. Okay, now we're getting to the heart of it, right?
Yeah.
I have to put myself out there. I might be seen. I might be rejected, perhaps.
Right.
Someone might say no, right? Yeah.
Or even be worse than that. They might laugh at me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. How about one other person? You know, something about the story that you hold or what you notice in your emotional or physical self when you think of marketing and selling.
Well, this is Christy, and I noticed quite a bit. The story, and I hate even verbalizing this because I don't believe it, but you hear so many, even in marketing, in people marketing successful coaching practices, they will oftentimes say, are you tired of being a coach that doesn't make any money? Or there are so many stories out there around how much money a coach makes.
Mm-hmm.
One of the ones that actually makes money coaching. So there seems to be that story that I really resist but yet become vulnerable to every now and then.
Mm-hmm.
And I start to kind of question whether or not it's true. And so then I tell myself, well, I do like to market, but in order to make one, you know, in order to be one of these coaches that makes a really, really good living off coaching, I need to do a lot of marketing. And then there's this cycle of, well, until I'm really successful, how can I put a lot of money into marketing? So there's this mythology that I have that marketing takes a lot of money. Again, on a logical sense, I don't even believe that, really, but it does compete for my space. And I found that when you asked what happens in my body, even though my emotional space feels pretty positive about marketing, I completely froze. I even stopped breathing.
Mm.
So I thought that was kind of interesting.
What a great awareness. Thank you for sharing that, Christy.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, you know, there's a lot about the mythology of coaching and of marketing, and all these things are tied together. All these stories kind of get in the way. So, you know, part of what I'm going to invite you to do in this call this afternoon is maybe just kind of examine some of your stories. Many times, confronting them, saying them out loud, writing them down, talking them out loud, is enough to bring them to a place where we can notice that that's what they are, a story. So let me throw out a few things just to challenge that story. So first of all, often a story that, well, you know, I'm not a good coach if I can't market or sell. And, you know, so really, just because you're a great coach does not mean you are also suddenly a great salesperson. You need to get over that. Just as you have done practice of your coaching skills, just as you have gotten some training and some feedback from others to help you become a better coach and noticed that your skill has improved as you have practiced it, it is the same thing with marketing. It's a different skill set. In one way, it's a different skill set. So you have to wear two hats, that of a brilliant coach and that of a business person. At the same time, I suggest to a lot of people that you notice that one of the powerful things we can do as coaches is to help people realize when they have a skill that they are using well in one area of their life or work, but not bringing it to other parts of their life or work. So sometimes they don't have to learn anything new. They just have to step back and notice that if they simply transfer that skill, that they will be much better in this other domain. I suggest that this is the same with coaching. You know, think about what are the skills of a good ICF-accredited coach? The ability to create a safe space, establish trust and intimacy, ask powerful questions, listen really well, be direct in communication, create awareness in people about something they're doing or not doing, and then help them design a framework for taking that, you know, moving from that place to somewhere else. And when you look at what marketing is about, how interesting. The goal of marketing is to build relationships with potential clients so that they will get to the point where they know, like, and trust you. Sounds a lot like trust and intimacy, right? It's a co-created space. You can't sell any product to someone who doesn't have some kind of a need or a problem that your product or service will address. I mean, you can market cars to people all day, but unless they're actually looking for a car, right, nothing happens. When you're in the marketing and selling space, it's critical to find out what kinds of challenges people have and what it is they're looking for. So you use active listening and powerful questioning. And a lot of marketing conversations and marketing copy that you put out there is about creating awareness and making connections. So, you know, on that level, let's notice that while the mechanics of coaching may be something that you get or don't get, and they need to learn a little bit, that the core conversational skills are identical to what you're actually doing as a coach. So I invite you to start to craft that story for yourself. So let's go through a little bit of structure here in this class. One of the first things I like to put out there is that you should not sell coaching. Don't sell coaching. People don't care about coaching. So you don't talk about the process. One of the least effective ways to sell coaching or market is to say, I'm a coach. And here's how coaching works. Who cares? Nobody cares. What people want is a solution to a problem that's currently in their face. Or they have some kind of a pain or an obstacle or a stuckness, as we like to use. And stuckness is, of course, a coachy term. But they're stuck somewhere in their life or work, and they are scanning the universe for some way to get around that stuckness, to get over that obstacle, to stop the pain, to get to the next place. So one of the things you need to do is sell outcomes, or you sell solutions to problems. So I'm going to walk you through a real quick exercise right now. And if you already know how to declare your value, great. Maybe this will reinforce it. And if you don't know what I'm talking about, hopefully this will surface something for you. I invite you to take a piece of paper and divide that paper into three columns. And go ahead and label those columns features, benefits, and value. Features, benefits, and value. So let me offer a metaphor as we're going through here. I'm going to talk about how cars actually get marketed and sold. And then I'm going to invite you to apply this concept to you as a product, and then I'll give you just a little bit of time to start doing some brainstorming. You will probably not complete this exercise, so I also invite you, should it resonate, to take time after the call to work on it. So let's go to this first column. So if one of the things you consider when you're buying a car is the features of that car. So imagine yourself walking into a showroom. The features are the things that are on the sticker on the window of the car. Or if you're shopping online, they're the column of things that, you know, talks about white wall tires and what size the engine is and the fact that it has leather seats or heated seats or a built-in GPS, okay? Those are features, paint, trim, things like that. So when you're selling you, when you're the product, what are some of your features? Well, your features are your experience, your education, both in terms of, you know, university or school education, as well as corporate training, your coach training itself, what discipline did you come out of? It's your life experience, which might be relevant for some people. It's your certifications. So take a moment and start to fill out that column listing what are the features, and, you know, think in terms of these are the things that might also often be on your resume, which is kind of the sticker you put in the window if you're trying to sell you. So let me give you 1 minute to start that. Okay, so that's 60 seconds. It goes very fast. You know, again, you can complete this later. Let's move to the second column now, though, to set up the exercise. So back to my car metaphor. What are some of the benefits of those features in a car? Well, a certain type of engine might allow you to go fast, or it might be low maintenance. Some benefits might be comfortable seating, or the fact that you won't ever get lost because you've got that built-in GPS. So the benefit might be you get full surround sound from this upgraded stereo system that's in the car, or that, you know, that hypoallergenic paint job means you won't get as many scratches. Obviously, I'm making this up here, but you get the idea. So now think about what are some of the benefits that you offer to clients. This might be things like insight, judgment. Particular coaching approach you offer might be holistic, or it might be very business-based, or it might be around, you know, something that comes off of the experience you've had. So think about some of the benefits that you offer to your clients as a coach. And again, I'll give you a minute to start that list. And time to move to column three. You know, cars have features and they have benefits, and we can talk about those till the cows come home. The reality is, that's not how cars get sold. This is how cars get sold. This car will make you feel sexy. This car will make you feel cool. The fact that it can go fast will allow you to feel like you're powerful. The fact that it has this particular feature, like anti-lock braking or something, people don't buy that. What they buy is the fact that when you are in difficult weather, you can keep your kids safe because your car will stop before it hits the truck in front of you. Think about the car commercials that you see. Right? So cars are sold based on the emotional sense, the kind of the holistic feel that car is going to create, the experience they're going to have. In coaching or in any kind of professional service, what we're actually selling is the outcomes. That's what has value. Remember, the solution to pain. So some things that are on my list, things that I know I sell to some of my clients, are things like a reduction of stress, feeling more effective, being happier, feeling more engaged, or being, you know, having a team that's more engaged, a sense of peace, a sense of competence. So again, I'm going to give you 1 minute to start a column of what value and outcomes you provide to your clients. Okay. And ding, once again, pens down, let's see what you've got in your paper. So I want to pause now in my presentation and again open up the lines, and I'd love to hear from one or two folks around anything that you noticed as you worked on this exercise. So what's something you observed or experienced here?
Pardon me, this is Karen, and I noticed that the first column was pretty easy to do, easier, and then the benefits, when I got into that, it took me longer. It was like I had to really work to come up with some of those things, and then I kind of got in the groove a little bit, but it was just slower coming. And then when we get to the value, that seemed to come a little more quickly, but at the same time, it really has you kind of search yourself. And I think that kind of, in addition, it's more kind of going back to a belief system of some sort. I don't know exactly how that shows up, but it's like, what do I really think I'm worth? What do I really think I provide? How broad is it? How deep is it? You know, is it just, you know, that kind of thing, it would have to be beginning to go to that level of, you know, and then asking, well, where do these ideas come from? The noticing.
Yeah, no, thanks for sharing that, Karen. Thanks for sharing that. How about somebody else?
Well, this is Stephanie, and what I found was that as I was doing the value, some of those things I had already put into benefits.
Okay.
So obviously the difference between benefits and value is not as clear to me.
Well, I'll be frank with you, Stephanie. I'm actually doing some rework on my own marketing copy right now, and did a little exercise yesterday with a colleague who's partnering with me, and I have that same experience a lot. Well, which is this? You know, is it a feature? Is it a benefit or is it an outcome, etc.? Sometimes there are things you can put in both columns, but let me tell you what the key difference is that might allow you to tease them out and notice which is more important to put in your marketing literature. And it's this. Features and benefits are talking about you, or me, right, us, the product. When we get to the third column and we're talking about outcomes and value, we're talking about them. We're talking about the clients. And I imagine... There's probably some of you on the line who have traveled to foreign countries. If you've ever had that experience of going to a place where whatever your native language is isn't what people speak. And, you know, notice that you can show up and you can be the most articulate person in the world, but if you speak English and you're in Italy, and you articulate beautifully in English, they can't hear you. They don't get it. I've done a lot of travel, and one of the things I've learned, I'm not huge with languages, but one of the things I've learned is that if I study for a little bit, and I learn, you know, 25 to 50 core words and phrases, like how to ask for directions, how to say please and thank you, maybe negotiate, you know, taxi fare or something like that, that people will pay more attention. You know, like if I show up and I'm a dumb American, they're going to be like, yeah, whatever. But if I show up and I can at least open the conversation, if I can at least say I don't speak Italian in Italian, they will give me a lot more attention, and we are far more likely to have a good conversation where the outcome works for everybody. not a perfect metaphor perhaps, yet it really is part of the marketing conversation. The degree to which you show up and you are speaking a language that resonates with the people that you're trying to communicate with, they are more likely to hear you. They are more likely to engage in conversation with you. And when I say conversation, I'm talking about both live conversation, like in a networking event, as well as coming up to you after you've been on stage, if you've been speaking some language that resonates with them, or clicking to say yes to sign up for your newsletter or get your free article if you're in the online world and, again, speaking their language. Okay. So any other questions or observations about this exercise before I move forward?
Jim, this is Barb. I really appreciated the distinction between talking about them versus talking about me as the product. I think that's a really nice way to think about the difference between value and features and benefits.
Yeah. And you know, you remind me, there's another point I usually want to make here, and that is one of the ways that we do marketing is we go out and we meet people. We go to networking events, we go to conferences, we, you know, one of the places to find clients is to go where they hang out. And in today's world, in much of the United States anyway, there are so many forms of active networking groups where there's always opportunities to go out and mingle with people. And networking rule, kind of networking 101, the most primal rule about effective networking is to be interested, not interesting. Meaning, when you show up at a networking event and you just go around everybody and say, hi, I'm a coach, blah, 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 and here's how I work, blah, 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 please hire me, I'm desperate, you know, they quickly scan the room for somewhere else to go. But if you show up and you're the person who says, so tell me about yourself. What do you do? Really? Wow, that's interesting. How'd you get into that kind of business? So what kind of situations do you get yourself into? Yeah, really? You know, blah, blah, blah. So again, show up with one of your coaching skills, asking powerful, open questions. You can end up in fascinating conversations with people who have the experience of coaching then, and you're speaking in their language, right? Their language is, it's all about me. And so when, at the end of that kind of a conversation, you part ways, people who have been great listeners are often assessed as being really great conversationalists, even if they said very little. If you have something to say, maybe it's the invitation to engage in that ongoing conversation with you. Hey, you know, I have this newsletter I write on this very subject. Could I, you know, if you have a card on you, maybe I could, you know, sign you up for that. Or I have this article that I've written on this very subject. I'd be happy to send it to you. Or whatever it is. It, you know, in an hour, I can only do so much around the mechanics of marketing. A lot of it is about showing up, showing that you know, that you understand something about them, you speak their language, and that you have some kind of an offer to make. They might not be ready for the offer of engaging in coaching for hundreds or thousands of dollars, but they might be ready for the offer of a free article or a link or something of value that would, again, demonstrate that you have something more to give. And on that note, let me move into the next segment of thinking here that I want to leave you with. One of the big transformational pieces for me in terms of running my own business was when I started following a marketing coach based out of Toronto named Scott Stratton. Some of you may be also followers of him. Scott coined a description of marketing that, to me, epitomizes the most effective framework for marketing. He describes traditional marketing, you know, where people like they create a commercial and they put it on TV, or they print up something and they put it in the mail, or they do direct mail, or, you know, they do billboards, whatever. That kind of marketing is what we call push and pray marketing. That's where you create a message, you push it out there, and pray someone sees it. That's traditional marketing all over. Well, when you're trying to sell a personal service, when you're a solopreneur, a better model is what he calls pull and stay marketing. Pull and stay marketing is when you get your head around this concept that you can actually make a living from a much smaller number of people than the entire world if you can build a tribe of people around you who have signed up and said, yes, I want to hear your message. I want to be part of your tribe, your community. So you find ways to pull them into your sphere of influence and then stay in conversation with them, thus pull and stay marketing. So this is the essence of permission marketing that is probably best demonstrated by having a newsletter or a blog or a Facebook page or some kind of social media page where people come and say they like you or they connect with you, and then you keep up some kind of a stream of conversation with them through your writing around core messages that will resonate with that tribe. So pull and stay marketing. I'm not necessarily saying you have to be in all the social media and do it all. There are, you know, dozens and dozens of avenues for marketing, and even the most radical of marketing coaches will tell you what you want to do is pick a small handful of venues and then do the small handful of marketing approaches very consistently. You don't have to be all over in the online world. You know, you don't have to have Twitter and Facebook and Pinterest and Instagram and LinkedIn and a blog and a newsletter and blah, 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 and network and speak and, you know, pick a few streams and then do them well. Another way to pull them in is to have some kind of a product that you sell or give away that gives people an experience of you. So it might be, quote unquote, a report or a white paper that you wrote that kind of captures the essence of the issues that clients of yours have experienced. I've written over time a number of e-books that actually the ones that I currently have out. I actually put together by assembling 140 of my past archived tweets. So 140 characters, I have 140 assembled on topics of leadership, happiness, and coaching. And so it's an ebook that I give away free. And of course, you know, when I make the offer, people have to go to my site to sign up to get the download, and then they're subscribed to my newsletter. There's various ways that people can kind of get me, and I'm sure that many of you have this kind of thing too. The reason why you do this is, again, because the goal of marketing is to move people from stranger to a place where they know you, like you, and trust you. Marketing is not selling. Marketing is getting people to the place where they know, like, and trust you, and then when they're at a place where they're ready to make a buying decision, they come to you, and that's when the selling process actually begins. You can't sell to somebody with whom you don't have some kind of a trust relationship. You don't have to know them personally, but they have to trust, like, your message. They have to like being a member of your tribe. All right. So let me pause again. What questions do you have about this concept of pull and stay marketing? Okay. Well, I assume you're either all okay, or you're stunned, or You're multitasking, so we'll move on. The last piece that I encourage you to consider is packaging for the product that is you. So there's a couple things to say here. One, and I'm sure most of you have heard this, but I'm going to repeat it just for your own value. One of the messages we hear constantly, This was Christy. Christy reminded us of this message we hear all the time. Coaches are shitty at, you know, making money, and the average coach makes whatever it is, blah, blah, blah. Depending on the survey, it's $20,000 or $10,000 or $50,000, whatever. It all depends on who you're asking. Well, about a year and a half ago, our chapter did it, well, a couple of us in the chapter did an informal thing where we went around for a couple of months and asked people about the composition of their business. And what we discovered was that nearly everybody in our chapter has the same kind of business model as we do. And that is, we have a business model where we have a variety of services, of which coaching is one. But when the ICF or PricewaterhouseCoopers comes along and says, how much money do you make for coaching? Well, we all have ethical, you know, we all have integrity. We're ethical. You know, when they say, how much money do you make from coaching? We give them our coaching revenue. It doesn't mean none of us are making money at coaching. It means that, or not, it doesn't mean that none of us are making a living. It just means that maybe coaching is a piece of a package of services. I mean, for me personally, for years, coaching was an accommodation. As part of my tracking, you know, I have all an Excel spreadsheet with all my invoicing and everything else in it, and I have it always rolling forward into different categories, and then those turn into a pie chart. For years, coaching was about 20 to 25% of my revenue stream. When people say, how much money do you make from coaching? I say, well, how much I make? And it wasn't a huge amount. I only ever had four or five clients at a time. It was an accommodation. Several years ago, I rebranded and repositioned my business and decided to really push coaching more. Last year, 84% of my total revenue came from coaching. So, you know, I was in six figures. I'm not a million-dollar coach. You know, last year my revenue was around $150,000. 84% of it was from coaching. I was very happy with that. But there have been years when it's been flipped the other way, right? So, you know, how else do you sell value? Because also keeping in mind that if you do training or speaking, for instance, as another revenue-generating thing, that those can also serve as marketing vehicles for that other service you offer, which is coaching. And, of course, coaching is also an entry point into an organization to also offer training or facilitation services you offer, right? You know, it's like every different way people can buy you can also be a form of your marketing because you establish your credibility in an organization and then teach them about the other products you offer. So that's one dimension of packaging. The other is, here was my huge shift for me. I used to sell coaching like I know many, many other coaches still sell coaching, which was, you know, I'd engage with my clients and we talked about the process and I have a whole intake process and everything else, but then they pay me monthly. So every month, every client had to rethink the decision about whether or not I'm going to continue to write this check and send it to Jim. Like every month, it was all about the selling process again. Then I learned about this concept called HEOBs. HEOB is an acronym for high-end outcome-based. High-end outcome-based. And what I learned to do was to view the coaching that I did not as a monthly thing and a series of, you know, unconnected conversations. I began to look at it as a process that had a beginning, a middle, and an end for clients. And I stepped back and examined, all right, so what is the length of time that people who really get great outcomes do work with me. And what I came to realize was that, first of all, nobody who quit before the six-month mark ever had sustained change. We had great conversations and great ideas, but they didn't stick with it long enough to create permanent change for themselves. Between 6 and 12 months, that's when people really started to nail outcomes in their life. So I repackaged my whole process. When you're talking to me about buying my services as a coach, I'm talking to you about a one-year engagement. At a minimum, 6 months with a renewal at 6 months. And, you know, once I've found that now that I do that, the vast majority of people who say, well, I don't want to commit to a year, they commit to 6 months. The vast majority of them renew for that second 6 months. And then, of course, some people continue beyond that. So I have a promise. Here's how the system works. Here's what we're going to do at the beginning. And here's some things we'll do in the middle. And here's where we'll stop and do assessment. And we'll recalibrate. And, you know, here's what we'll do near the end. And here are the outcomes that I can promise you'll get at least closer to if you stay with it for this kind of thing. It's much easier to sell that value because people can see how it is kind of a program or a process. You can identify benchmarks. You can have assessment points. You can have, you know, recontracting and goal setting actually built into the system. You know, at 6 months, we will sit down, we'll assess your goals, notice what you've completed, and redesign your foundational goal document so that it'll be, you know, relevant for the second half of the year. And then once you've got that base offering, then start to work off of that. So find different ways for people to engage, but without compromising value. So if your primary program, say, is $500 a month, so it's $6,000 for the year, and people don't have that much money, well, don't compromise. Don't say, well, okay, you know, I really like you, and I know you can't afford my coaching, so I will be a sweet person, and I will give it to you for $100. No, don't do that, because notice that every time you do that, you are now sucking up your time that you will not have to market to the people who, you know, are available out there. One of the things I do is I always hold 2 scholarship slots in my practice. So if I come across someone who can't afford my services and I really like them, and this is especially true when I encounter people like in nonprofit areas or, you know, people who are unemployed or something and could eventually be a paying client, I will work with them for much less, but only 2 people. And if my 2 scholarship slots are filled, you know, and I haven't rolled one of them off, I will tell people, you know, here's how it works, and I can put you on a wait list. But I don't keep saying yes. Or if they have less money, and, you know, then we talk about, well, maybe you only enroll in the first 3 months of the program, or we only talk half as often. Or maybe you have a group offering where you can say, well, you know, every once in a while I have a list of people who want to coach with me but can't afford my full rack rate, so I'll assemble a group of people with similar goals, and, you know, that only costs, you know, like 1/3 or something like that, and people will go on my wait list. So you have to be creative. My encouragement is to be creative around that core product so that you're always selling something that has a beginning, middle, and end, a defined outcome, a defined value, and that doesn't require people to make but one buy decision at the beginning. So I invite you now, we're heading toward the end of the conversation here. I invite you to take a moment right now and write down what you're thinking in this moment about a framework. What, you know, think about what pieces, parts you do offer ad hoc right now that you could put together into a package or a program, and then think about how you might define other value add pieces, and when you're in my coaching program with me, you can email me at any time, or you can get occasional, you know, ad hoc calls by giving me 24 hours notice, or I will occasionally send you an article or a book, you know, that I find relevant to what you're working on, or, you know, maybe you'll host a mastermind group once a month of all your clients. There's all kinds of ways that you can add little pieces of value that won't necessarily cost you anything except some attention. And suddenly, what you're doing feels much more robust to that person who really is just looking for support and the energy to make a shift in their life, or their work, or their leadership. Okay, final note, then I'll see if there's any questions, and I know Barb needs 2 minutes at the end. When it comes to marketing strategies, also keep in mind that if you aren't already doing it, that speaking on some topic that's related to your coaching or, you know, something you believe in is one of the more powerful ways for a coach to engage with people. Since coaching is such a personal relationship, it's very powerful to actually experience someone who is, you know, potentially a coach up on stage talking about something that really resonates for me. So, you know, if you do speaking, one of the things to work on is considering how you make an offer from the stage. You know, what is a giveaway or a promise that you make that would encourage people to pull out their business cards or to sign up on a list at the back of the room? Again, to join your tribe. Your main goal in speaking should be to walk away with email addresses and permission to engage people in that conversation of pull and stay marketing. And then the final thing I will remind you of is that just like coaching itself, you will only get better if you do it regularly. So one of my primary tips around marketing is make sure you don't fall into the entrepreneur's trap of, I'm busy, I don't have time to market, I'll market when I have time. Because what happens then is you end up on the roller coaster. Like, you're really busy and you're making money, but you're not doing any marketing, and then all your clients roll off, and boom, you go way down on the roller coaster because you haven't been doing any marketing. So now you're doing all marketing, and then your funnel fills up and you go way up on revenue, but, you know, so you have feast and famine. Instead, figure out a way on your calendar to honor some amount of marketing space every week. And I will share a tip. This is what I do, and it was, again, one of the things that really transformed my business and helped me into a steady state. What I do is I have a permanent standing appointment with myself every Tuesday. I have an appointment at 9 to 10:30, so it's 90 minutes, and then 10:30 to noon. And they're coded in yellow on my calendar. Green is making money. and yellow is marketing, which is almost green, right? That's my color coding that I use. My process is that I give myself permission to move those two 90-minute blocks anywhere in the calendar. It might be moving it to an evening networking event. It might be moving it to Friday instead of Tuesday. But I can never, ever, ever delete that from my calendar. And if my calendar fills up, I have to say no, so I protect those two 90-minute segments. So every week, I'm doing marketing. And I promise that when you do some amount of marketing every week, that eventually it starts to pay off. Instead of, like Stephanie, going and doing the dishes. So, all right, so I think we have like 3 or 4 minutes left. Barb, is there time for any questions or closing comments?
Well, I wanted to mention, Jim, that you've offered to stay on for anyone who wants to hang out for maybe 10, 15 minutes after we end here in a couple minutes and do a little sort of debrief and idea sharing. I've got a few questions for you that I'm dying to ask, particularly around how you define outcomes and value of, you know, a one-year program and whether you tailor that, you know, for different kinds of clients or prospective clients.
Okay.
So for those who want to stay on, we are going to, you can still do that. Is that right, Jim?
Yes, I can. Yeah,
oh,
I can spend about 15 minutes. Yeah.
Super. Thank you. So we'll do that. We have about a minute and a half maybe to go around. Could we just have folks maybe talk about something they're taking away in case they're not going to stay with us for the next 10, 15 minutes? Mm-hmm. Would that be okay with you, Jim?
That's awesome.
Okay. And before we do that, I want to give the last code word, and it's 2015. That's the second code word for this continuing ed credit. There was so much to absorb, Jim. I think everyone's in that wheel-turning mode.
But I hope so. If I've provoked thinking in a lot of people, then I have done my job.
Yeah, so let's hear from a few folks. What are you taking with you?
I'm putting two 90-minute segments into my calendar every week for marketing.
Go you! Yes!
Yay, Jim.
Thank you. So it all came together for me. Thank you very much, Jim.
You're welcome.
This is Karen. I really am challenged by the idea of a giveaway of some sort, or what is going to pull people to me, because I've never done the blog thing, and I'm not one who sits down and writes articles. I can speak. I like speaking in public, but the fact of the matter is you still are wanting to give something away, and what does that look like?
Yeah, it sounds like something perhaps for you to have some conversation around. And just a really quick thing, if you like to speak, you do it often, and you're good at it, consider, you know, having a friend come along with a tripod and an iPhone and maybe a remote wireless mic, all of which are incredibly cheap and easy to do, and record one or two of your talks. Edit those into a little thing of learning pieces and make that your offer. Hey, if you want to have some reminders of this kind of talk, I've got this video product. You know, give me your card and I'll send you to a link. You can download it for reminders.
Oh, that's cool. Thank you.
You're welcome. Anyone else want to declare a takeaway before we officially move into Q&A?
Yeah, this is Christy again. I took away a whole bunch of things, but primarily I really love the defining between the pull and stay and the push and pray marketing. I've never heard that referred to like that. And I love the absolute best thing is the high-end outcome-based. I recently did move to a packaging type system, 6 and 12 months. So
good.
I intend to really stay on for the next few minutes just to hear what questions people ask about that, because my real question is how much of that do you break down on the actual web page, or how much do you just leave the details of that for when a person first speaks with you?
Yeah,
so.
That is a great question. Yeah. Okay, all right, so hang on to that for a second. Barb, do you want to turn off the recording, or are you going to keep that on for the Q&A as well?
I think I'm going to go ahead and keep it on.
Okay, all right. Well, Christy, why don't we go ahead and dive into your question then?
Mm-hmm. Sure.
So say it again. What is it exactly you're asking?
So this just came to me this morning that I just put on my website new pricing, and I have never actually offered programs before, like a 6, or I've sold coaching packages of sessions, but never an actual program.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
that's what I'm moving to do. And I was very excited about that, and I on my webpage, I basically just give a broad overview of what they'll take away from this. But what I was thinking about is I really need to break this down in my own mind and say, okay, what are we going to focus on for the first month? What are we going to focus on for the second month? You know, to sort of develop sort of a curriculum, if that makes sense.
Hmm.
And so this is what And this is what's unclear to me at this point. How do you structure 6 or 12 month programs, or do you just take it person by person, and it's a different program for everybody?
Yeah, so you know, here's a couple things. First of all, you know, depending on your definition of coaching and how much of a purist you are, you know, just be careful that putting an agenda out there for each month kind of implies that you're going to decide what to focus on, and there's an element to that that is not really coaching.
Yeah.
Now, having said that, you probably noticed that there is a flow of the kinds of things that people, you know, tend to bring to coaching as they mature in their coaching.
Mm-hmm.
Like, one of the things that I tell people all the time, most of my clients are people who are leaders in organizations, and so they always present with business issues. And I always tell people, right up front, whether you intend to or not, I predict that by month two or three, we will probably be getting into the personal side of things.
Okay.
Because you will notice that whoever you are is who's showing up as a leader, and sometimes the path to improving your leadership skills is strictly at work, and sometimes it's about taking care of something in your personal life, or about noticing your personal life, something in your personal life that's draining you, and we got to go take care of that so that when you show up as a leader, you're intact, right?
Mm-hmm.
I'm not saying we're going to go there, but I'm saying this is something I notice.
Yeah.
Another thing that I do, I have like a one-page framework that I customize it pretty much before I send it out for everybody with little tweaks and so on, but there is a flow. For instance, what my coaching framework, I call it, it starts with, you're going to have all this prep work, and here's the kind of things you're going to do, and there's going to be some upfront paper and pencil assessments, and then we're going to do an intake conversation where we're really going to explore your goals and determine how we're going to work together. Then ongoing, we will have calls at regular intervals. I don't say exactly what that's going to be because it depends on the client. Calls at regular intervals, you will develop practices and actions for yourself, et cetera, et cetera. So I, kind of just in two sentences kind of outline what happens in a typical call. You know, check in, explore a topic, create a commitment or a practice. For my corporate clients, what I build in there then is that somewhere in the 3 or 4 month range, I come in and do a shadowing in the workplace where I follow them around through a day of meetings. I call it observation in the wild. Okay, and I talk about how I come in and I observe you in your native habitat to see what things I notice that you may not be aware of at all. I will also, in some packages, build in an element of, an opportunity to come in and work with their team, or maybe come in and speak with some of their peers or their boss if they would like to gather some other information. We do a check-in at 3 months and 6 months to assess progress and recalibrate as necessary. And then I also list out some other things. I call it the coaching gym. And I mean like G-Y-M, not J-I-M. The coaching gym is, it's like when you sign up for a gym and, there's a membership fee. And if you never go, you pay the fee. And if you go a lot, you pay the same fee. So here are some other things that are available to you. Email access. Anytime, I will respond within 24 hours, the availability to set up ad hoc calls, occasional reading assignments or, suggested articles, the opportunity to, once you've worked with me in one of my regular programs, you have the opportunity to continue on a reduced basis. Like I won't set up, for instance, a quarterly coaching plan with a new client, but if you've worked with me for 6 months or a year, then we can set up a check-in process because you understand what it's all about. And so there's a couple of other things like that. So it fills up a whole page, and it feels robust. And most of my clients never take advantage of 90% of all those little extra things. But up front, it's like, wow, that has value.
Okay. Perfect. Thank you, Jim.
You're welcome.
So, Jim, this is Barb. Thanks for what you just described, and Christy, thanks for the good question. It sounds like in what you described that you're not necessarily describing outcomes so much as the flow, the framework. Is that true?
Well, yeah, because the framework or the process is what we're going to get into.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I only talk about that once we're in the selling conversation.
Yeah.
You know, I've attracted them through the conversation about outcomes. You know, is this you? Do you have these issues, right? You know?
Right.
And part of my process is when someone approaches me, and this is fairly common terminology out there in the marketing world, I'm not a person who does what I call a coaching demonstration or a free coaching or, you know, something like that. I call it a strategy session.
Mm,
in my case,
nice.
It's a leadership strategy session. I send them a series of 9 questions, and I ask them to prepare some notes in advance. Then we get on the phone. I've got a total of about 15 questions I ask them, but those 9 have gotten them warmed up. And we spend an hour, and the focus of that hour is something like this. So tell me about your work, what do you do, or your life, whatever, right? Tell me about some of the concerns that are bringing you into this conversation. And, you know, what are some of the issues associated with those concerns? And what's the cost to you now and in the future if you don't shift this, you know, personally, professionally, et cetera, et cetera? Well, you know, what would you rather have happening? You know, what's your vision of the future here? And how would that be better? And why do you want that? And why is that important to you? And then we get to some meeting. And that might be 35, 40 minutes. So it's all about pain, vision, gap. A yawning chasm of a gap. And then we ask, this is the question I ask next. Well, how do you think coaching might help you with that? I don't tell them. They tell me.
That's brilliant.
So how do you think coaching? And I will tell you, you know, when I started this, I never expected it, and now I expect it every time, and it happens every time. One of the things that they almost always say is, oh, my God, wow, if this is what coaching's like, I mean, just hearing myself talk about it or just talking about it out loud, this has really helped me understand blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, they've made connections that we don't even realize they've made.
Exactly. So then the next question I ask is, well, if we were to end this conversation right now, what value would you be taking away? And they always tell me something. And then I say, okay, so what do you want to know about coaching with me? So the first 35, 40 minutes, I have not talked about coaching. I've only talked about them.
Mm-hmm.
If at that point this is resonating with them, then they have questions about coaching. How does it work? That's why I talk about my coaching framework. I can send them this one-page summary. You know, we talk about logistics. We talk about fees. We encounter objections. We kind of work through those. And then I always close with just a couple quick questions. Coaching takes a lot of time and energy. Are you willing to do the hard work?
Mm-hmm.
Then if you're going to get any coaching outcomes, you're going to have to change how you think or speak or walk or talk or sit or stand or breathe. Are you really willing and ready to step into that discomfort on purpose?
Yeah.
Right? I have a couple of other questions of a similar nature, right? You know, it's kind of like around, you got to be ready, you got to be willing, you got to be able, you know, do you have the support structure around you to be able to spend time on coaching? You know, for instance, does your boss support this, or does your partner support this? You know, that you might be showing up differently and you might freak them out.
Mm-hmm.
That's how I put it. And, you know, usually they laugh, and it's either like, oh, yeah, I guess I had to talk to them, or, oh, yeah, they're the ones who are encouraging me to do this. Okay, then, we're good. And then I say, okay, well, so, you know, here's how it works. You know, how are you going to pay? I can take your credit card number now. Let's go.
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't work that way every time, but when the chemistry is there, that's how the flow goes. And
you've had them come in really prepared too, Jim. It sounds like you've given them those 9 questions, which I think is fantastic, right? Because they've already been chewing on those a little
right.
bit, right?
Right, right. So they might send me 2 or 3 lines in response to some of those questions, but then when we're talking about them, it's 5 minutes per question, and it usually turns out there's layer under layer under layer of stuff as long as I keep staying there, and what else, and what else, and what else. So again,
you actually ask them to send you some responses in writing, not just think about those questions.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Nice. So you've got them kind of committed and doing homework already. That's good.
That's the idea. Yeah.
Yeah, great. So your framework really, back to that piece, you're really describing what does the 6-month or 12-month period sort of entail.
Right. We're not talking about that until they've already said, yes, I want to coach. I want to hire you as
yeah.
a coach.
Right. Oh, really good stuff. Really good stuff. I know it's quarter after the hour. I don't know if you want to take any more questions, Jim.
Well, how about one more question? Because it's quarter after 7 here. We're in the tax season. My wife is a CPA, and so I only see her like one day a week. She gets home at 8:00. So I have dinner in the oven. I just have to go check on it shortly. So one more question will be good.
Who's got a question for Jim?
Okay. Maybe yes. we're good.
Hello?
Hi.
Yes.
Hi, sorry. I just thought of a great question that I want to ask Jim. This is Judy.
Hi, Judy.
And I very much appreciate everything that you're sharing, and I do a lot of what you are suggesting, but I have a question for you, and that is when you sell your 6-month program, your year program, do you have your people pay you in advance up front for the entire program?
I will tell you there's a number of arrangements I use. And by the way, this is something I didn't mention earlier. I'm a big believer in value-based pricing. So I don't put prices on my website because the level and the impact of the person I'm coaching and frankly the budget of the organization may change that. My core package is a 12-month package, full immersion, blah, 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 and it's $12,000. So $1,000 a month, essentially. But I have sold that same package for double that or 1.5 times that, so 18 or 24. I don't do that as often as I'd like, and that's what I'm working on, getting a higher-end client and larger budgets. But I've also taken that same package and sold it at half price in a couple situations where I really liked the client and I truly believe that there are budgetary restrictions, like I'm doing it at that half price rate right now for the principal of a private high school, and I just really believe in the mission of the school, and they were able to scrape up half that money, and I said, you know what, I'm going to give you a full year package. So having said that, yes, coaching should always be paid in advance.
Mm-hmm.
Always paid in advance. It's just kind of it's something I think we've taken from personal services in general.
Mm-hmm.
So what I do is I offer people different combinations. If I am billing an organization, I will offer that they can, because it's like pay in advance of each period. So what I usually say is it's 50% at the beginning of the contract and 50% at the middle. And if at any time you want to leave coaching and we have a conversation and we're truly going to do that, I'll refund the leftover amount. But that's only ever happened to me twice, and both times we did a good recovery, and then they came back as clients. So, so if it's $12,000, they're going to pay $6,000 in month one and $6,000 at the beginning of month seven.
Mm-hmm.
For some corporate clients, I will also offer, if they want to pay me up front, the full amount up front, I will offer a 5% discount,
mm-hmm.
but they have to pay me by check, you know, no credit cards or anything like that otherwise. And then for direct pay clients, people who are paying out of their own pocket, or in some cases it's the organization, they have a corporate credit card and they travel, get travel mile points or whatever, I have a merchant account in PayPal, so we can set it up for monthly payments. I take the credit card then, and we just set it up for installments at the beginning of each month.
That are automatic?
Yes, it's automatic. Yeah, it's automatic. It gets set up at the beginning, and it's on autopilot then. I love that arrangement because,
mm-hmm.
A, I don't have to issue an invoice. I hate all the paperwork stuff, and it becomes invisible to them. They just, you know, they get their monthly statement, they pay it, but they never have to think about it again, nor do I. It just happens. It's lovely.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. That's great. Thank you. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
And thanks for being so candid and open, Jim, about, you know, these fees and so forth that you charge. It's been so helpful to actually have the numbers as an example.
You know, I'm glad you find it helpful. I used to have my own angst around talking about money. I mean, that's a big problem for most coaches, or most entrepreneurs for that matter, is, you know, a relationship with money. But I finally realized, you know, I was sitting down with coaches who were saying, I'm making, you know, $30,000 a year, and there'd be somebody over here in my mastermind group who makes $250,000 a year on coaching. And once we all got over the angst of actually declaring what we make and how we charge, we learned, A, we can learn from each other by talking openly about it, and B, the reality is that most of the time, the additional income comes with a lot of additional work, and for most of us, we find an income level that suits us at the level we want to work.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah.
I love doing this kind of work. You know, people say, oh, gosh, you know, you should hire more people because, you know, you're really good at what you do. And you know what? When I left the corporate world, I didn't want to hire more people. I'm not intending to sell my company. I'm just going to fade into the twilight. And when I'm 90 years old, I might still be coaching part-time. And the glorious thing about coaching is no one of your clients knows about any other client. So if I'm coaching one client when I'm 90, that client doesn't know whether I have 12 like them or they're the only one. So
you're at 85% coaching now, you said, Jim. Are you aiming for 100%?
You know, I'd love to. The highest I ever hit was 94% one year.
Uh-huh.
That was a really good year. I sold a couple of high-end packages that really, really nailed it for me. But the reality is that I have to keep a couple of other things in my portfolio in order to get into some companies. I will always have a portion of my income that is around speaking. I will speak for free to the right audience, but some people want to pay me, so I'm like, okay, please, mm-hmm. thank you. I still have a cadre of clients that I've worked with on and off for years where they knew me first as a leadership trainer, and then I became a coach, and they will still call me. I don't market training anymore, but if someone has used me as a trainer, I will go in and I will do training and facilitation, and I'll go in and I'll run a 2 or 3 day strategy retreat for their leadership. That's not really coaching, but
right.
it's in that same venue, so
uh-huh.
it's a different income stream, and that's why, you know, some of my money is not purely from coaching. So.
Yeah.
So, again, I encourage everybody. Listen, before we hang up, Barb, I have a couple-page document on marketing e-resources that I have put together for some other venues. I just updated it in December. Do you have the email addresses of all the people who registered for the call tonight?
I do, yes.
Okay, all right. Then I will let you know, this is just a little surprise bonus. I will email it to you before I leave my desk here. And I invite you to just send it out to all the folks who are on the call.
It just
has a couple of ideas that I talked about, some resource sites if you want to do article marketing or something like that, a couple notes about social media presence. And it's also got some of my social media sites. I've had people in the past ask me, well, you know, what do I need to put up on mine? What should it look like? So, you know, if I'm not saying I'm the best example, but if anybody would like to take a look at anything that I have out there, feel free to steal anything that works for you, because my goal is for all coaches to do better.
Yes.
Okay?
Oh, great. Yes, I will be happy to send that along to everyone that participated.
Okay.
And maybe even beyond that, yeah, if you don't mind, we could actually make that available to others in the chapter as well.
Hey, as long as you leave my name and contact info on it, I'm fine with
Absolutely.
That.
Absolutely. And just because we're still recording here, can you name your website for people, Jim?
Oh, sure. So my brand is The Executive Happiness Coach. That's who I am. So my website is TheExecutiveHappinessCoach.com. And I invite anybody on the call who's on LinkedIn to look for the Executive Happiness Coach and connect with me. Just remind me where you saw me. Hey, I saw you on the New Mexico call. Or friend me on Facebook. On Twitter, I'm Jim Smith Online, because the Executive Happiness Coach is too long.
Mm-hmm. Great.
Yes.
Excellent. This has been fantastic. Thanks for delivering such great value, Jim, during this 90 minutes.
You're welcome, Barb. I'm glad that the person who was in the Gestalt program recommended it. So pass it all forward, and good luck to all of you.
All right. Thanks very much.
All right.
Thank
Bye-bye
you
now.
So much.
All right. Good night, everyone.
Good night.
Good night.